Many of you know that every year, members of our congregation have a week-long retreat at Camp Richardson on the south shore of Lake Tahoe. And our week at Tahoe this year was just last week, and I was up there along with several of us here in celebration this morning. I recognize among this group many people that I've seen for the last week. And it was a lot of fun. Those of you who were there, it was fun, right? But it was cold too, right? Of course, Lake Tahoe sits at around 6,200 feet in elevation, and it's surrounded by mountains that have snow on them, and there's a lot of wind, so of course it gets cold. It's always cold this time of year at Lake Tahoe, but this year it was a little bit different. During our week at Tahoe, we have certain rituals, a set program that has evolved over, I think, 37 years of trial and error, and it is by now a really good program, and it's run well by the organizers and the deans who do so much work to make our camp go well. And one of the rituals that really feels essential to our experience up there at Tahoe is this great big cookout that we have together at the beach on Wednesday evening. You know, it's halfway through the week, and it's an opportunity to eat in community out under some ponderosa pines along the lakeshore. At this annual barbecue, we announce the winners of the all-important sandcastle building contest. And we have an informal, unspoken competition around who can bring the best side dish. And we drink each other's wine. And we chat with folks with whom we may not have had an opportunity to catch up with during the week. The Wednesday evening barbecue is one of the best parts of the week. And this is the year when there were snow flurries at our barbecue. That is not an exaggeration. Baby, it was cold outside. And outside is where most of the people in our group were sleeping. Now, I happen to be married to someone who dearly loves not camping. So our family signed up for one of the cabins. But the cabins, most of them anyway, are not winterized. They have no insulation. And the boards that separate the inside from the outside don't always come together in a way sufficient to keep the sunlight out, let alone the wind. So we were cold. But here's the thing. Even though I regret my decision not to bring a big, thick winter coat to Tahoe this year, still the cold was kind of fun. It brought us together as a group. It gave us something to complain about. And in the end, it gave us something to laugh about. It gave us stories that we will tell for years. And I know that at least for some of the kids with us in Tahoe, that barbecue Wednesday evening, it was the first time they had seen snowflakes fall from the sky. And so that's magical. So in the end, except for the part about being cold, I actually loved the fact that I was cold at Tahoe this year. But even as I say that, I am aware, painfully aware, that my ability to love the cold was only possible because I knew that in a matter of days, I would be leaving the cold, driving home in a warm minivan to a warm house in a warm climate. My enjoyment of the cold was a privilege not enjoyed by the untold thousands of homeless and inadequately housed and insufficiently clothed folks who live between Oakland and Tahoe. And what do we as people of faith do with the knowledge that so many people suffer in the cold? Not by choice, but by circumstances that are beyond their control. Unfortunately, I cannot give you a real answer to that question during a sermon, mostly because I don't have an answer. The problem of homelessness is too complicated, and besides, like a lot of people, I'm scared by homelessness. Homelessness involves a cluster of intersecting challenges that seem impossible to untangle. There are economic issues, issues around class and prejudice. Frequently, there are mental health issues, often drug addiction issues. More often than not, the addiction exists because folks are self-medicating with drugs, in part because our country's healthcare system is so messed up, especially in the area of mental health. In order to understand homelessness enough to do something about it, an individual or a church would have to get involved in ways that are scary for a lot of us. And even if we weren't scared off by homelessness at all and all the problems that surround it, who has the time to get involved? At least, who has the time to get involved in ways that are truly effective? We could hire professionals to be involved on our behalf. But who's going to pay for it? I don't know the answer to any of those questions. But I do know that the church is called to go to uncomfortable places. And I say that in response to the story that Carol read before I started preaching. In the story, Jesus and his disciples traveled by boat across the Sea of Galilee, a lake that is not unlike Lake Tahoe in that it's about the same size as Tahoe, and it's surrounded by what appear to be mountains, only they're not really mountains because the Sea of Galilee is 700 feet below sea level, so what you actually see are cliffs leading up to hills that aren't all that high relative to the ocean, but the effect is about the same. And like Tahoe, there was in Jesus' time something of a border in the middle of the Sea of Galilee. Only instead of separating Californians from Nevadans, it separated Jews and Syrians. In the story, Jesus and his disciples went from the Jewish side over to the Syrian side of the lake, near what today we call the Golan Heights. While in Gentile territory, Jesus and his friends met a wild man, a man possessed by demons, a man who had been living among the tombs, and Jesus cast the man's demons into a herd of pigs, who then ran into the lake and drowned. This is a story in which Jesus confronts a whole mess of interrelated and uncomfortable problems. There's the problem of prejudice. Jesus and his friends are in this story among people they considered foreign and therefore unclean. The man is possessed by demons. We'd call him mentally ill today, but in those days the diagnostic tools were a little less scientifically oriented. Being possessed by demons made the man unclean. And for a Jewish person, anyone who lived among tombs was unclean. And when the demons left the man, they inhabited a herd of swine. Again, totally not kosher, totally unclean. But Jesus led his disciples into that place of total uncleanliness, a place with a total serious ick factor. And because they went to that uncomfortable place, they were able to do a great thing. They were able to heal a man and to restore him to his community. They also made this man the first Christian evangelist. Up until this point in the story of Jesus' ministry, Jesus tells his disciples to be quiet about Jesus' work. Everything he does that's miraculous and great. It's what the biblical scholars call the messianic secret. Jesus would do some great miracle and then he'd tell his disciples to hush up about it. And nobody really knows why, but then when Jesus healed the wild man on the far side of the lake, the man wanted to follow Jesus, but Jesus said, no, go tell everyone what God has done to you. So he's the first real evangelist, and it's a sign of God's grace, and it comes because Jesus was willing to visit difficult and uncomfortable places, and we too, as individuals, as a church, must visit uncomfortable places if ever we hope to have an impact on the world that is our home. Now, as I was writing those words, shivering in my cabin on Lake Tahoe one morning, words that exhort the church to go to uncomfortable places, I was feeling grateful, because I was cold, that some of the places we need to visit aren't physical. We don't necessarily need to get cold to visit uncomfortable places. In fact, we also need to go to places that are intellectually and spiritually uncomfortable, places that where we will have uncomfortable and difficult conversations. And we need to challenge ourselves by being vulnerable in those uncomfortable places. After celebration this morning, we're going to have a conversation about faith and politics. And that certainly will take us to challenging and perhaps uncomfortable places. And I don't know about you, but I still feel as if the spiritual wind has been knocked out of me after last week's massacre in Orlando. My heart remains broken in several places. And I don't think any of us will have any kind of meaningful healing until we as a society visit places we do not want to visit, places that make us uncomfortable. In our society, we have to have a really frank conversation about homophobia, not just because some people among us spew vile things and act violently towards members of the LGBTQ community, not just because there's hate, but because there's silence. Too many of us don't respond when someone says something awful. We need to have a serious talk about homophobia in our society. not so hard in this congregation, I suppose, but we need to leave this congregation and go to places where the homophobia exists, and we need to talk about it. In the same way, we need to have a serious come-to-Jesus talk about guns in America. And we need to have that conversation, even if it means alienating family members who are Second Amendment fanatics. We need to confront our society's Islamophobia and the almost gleeful way in which some folks in our country seized on the Pulse nightclub tragedy and used it as an excuse to double down on anti-Muslim rhetoric, as if our homophobia could be cured by an extra dose of Islamophobia. So we need absolutely to go to difficult places. I'll be honest with you. I don't have the answers to anything about what happened in Orlando last week. I have no idea what to say. I have no idea what to do. But I do know that we have to have the conversations. And we have to have them even though they're comfortable, uncomfortable. And we need to go to places where it is more uncomfortable to have the conversations. We can't just have the conversation in our bubble. We need to have the conversation outside of our bubble, in places where it's uncomfortable to actually talk about the issues that once talked about will move us towards at least some kind of solution. So we absolutely need to go to difficult and uncomfortable places spiritually, but we need also to go to physical places of discomfort. We cannot avoid it. For me, this means I need to spend more time in places like the intersection of Shattuck and University in Berkeley. And I need to go there because I'm uncomfortable with the issue of homelessness. Maybe you're fine with homelessness. Maybe you need to spend some time in East Oakland, perhaps walking with us on one of our monthly ceasefire walks through one of the most dangerous neighborhoods in the United States. Maybe some of us need to spend more time working in food pantries. I don't know where we will be called as individuals or as a church. I don't know where we're called physically. I don't know where we're called spiritually or intellectually. All I know is that God calls us to places where we're uncomfortable. God calls us to conversations that are difficult. God calls us to actions that aren't easy. Not just because it's hard to do the actions, but because it's hard to change our hearts. I don't know where God is calling us as individuals or as a church, but I trust that God will lead us to places that need the tenderness of grace. Places that need the kind of solutions-oriented thinking at which Presbyterians tend to excel. God may not lead us to a place of comfort. In fact, I think God almost certainly will make us uncomfortable. I think that's part of the spiritual life. But I trust that the places God will take us are places that in the end are good. Places made beautiful by the touch of God's loving kindness. Amen.